This week on the GPP Activism and Corporate Governance Newsletter. Changes ahead. A common theme from this year's Berkeley Forum on Corporate Governance. San Francisco greeted attendees of the Berkeley Fall Forum with brisk air and the turning of leaves, signs of change that echoed through the two-day confab, across geopolitical threats, regulatory uncertainty, and the promises of AI, conference panelists made clear, the speed of change has been jarring. Change rang true from the stark difference in how corporate leaders are responding to the second Trump administration compared to the first, with almost non-existent pushback to policies, which the Financial Times' Stephen Morris attributed as a mix of pragmatism, opportunism, and a healthy dose of fear. We heard a similar sentiment during a panel that featured our own Lauren O'Dell, where TPG Capital's Deputy General Counsel, Matthew Coucher, noted that CFIUS risk analysis is being done much earlier in deal processes than ever before. One change that corporates are not seeing happening under the new regime, deregulation. Instead, panelists are seeing meaningful re-regulation around different priorities, tariffs, hydrocarbon, production, which companies need to understand and reposition their engagement strategies for. As for the ever-existential question of whether to stay incorporated in Delaware, practitioners agreed that Delaware remains dominant despite the 25 corporations that redomiciled in Nevada last year. Regarding the Silver State, shareholder lawyer Jeroen van Kwawegen quasi-joked that only controlling shareholders with less than good intentions reincorporate in Nevada, taking a dig at Sphere Entertainment. Is Jim Dolan, goodbye, good luck, Delaware doesn't need you. Conference attendees got the added treat to be a part of a live taping of David Marcus's podcast, Drinks, with The Deal, featuring University of Iowa professor and author of Catching Cheats, Eric Lai. Noting that conflict leads to fraud, Lai spoke about his fascination with fraud and the systemic conflicts that allow for it to happen. He also questioned whether eliminating quarterly earnings and moving to a twice-per-year arrangement actually creates the right incentives for management teams in how to approach earnings management and reporting. The conference concluded with a timely panel on shareholder democracy and ownership, where speakers debated the plethora of changes affecting proxy voting, changes at the Big Three, Exxon, voting choice, and changes at ISS and Glass Lewis, to name a few. Under the picture of a more fragmented proxy voting dynamic, panelists disagreed on who benefits more, shareholders or companies. Vanguard's global head of investment stewardship, John Galloway, shared his view that clients for years had been asking for more agency in proxy voting, hence his firm's push on pass-through voting, and his belief that markets will evolve and clarity will come through even in a more disaggregated world. In the world of activism, the Financial Times reports that activist investor Carinade Capital Management accused billionaire Bill Foley of egregious corporate governance at holding company Canny Holdings, alleging he and associates took hundreds of millions from shareholders through excessive payments and share deals. Carinade, which holds a 6.1% stake, plans a proxy fight to replace four directors at Canny's December meeting. The Financial Times also reports that Apollo Global and KKR will invest $7 billion in Keurig Dr. Pepper to support its $15.7 billion acquisition of J.D. Peet's, providing funding aimed at deleveraging the transaction and strengthening the company's balance sheet. KDP began seeking financing in early September, before activist Starboard Value approached the company. In deal news, and bear with us, it's a busy week in M&A land. The Financial Times notes that in a move that was expected after proxy advisors such as ISS recommended against the merger, shareholders of Core Scientific have voted down the merger with CoreWeave. The vote, which led to Core Scientific announcing that it formally terminated the merger agreement, comes after numerous shareholders, namely hedge fund 2C's Capital, argued that the deal should reject the transaction because it did not properly value the company long term. Reuters reported that Swiss drug maker Novartis will acquire Avidity Biosciences for about $12 billion as it plans to bolster its portfolio of muscle disorder treatments. The announcement, which coincided with Avidity stating that it will separate its early-stage precision cardiology programs into a new public company, continues the uptick in Novartis's deal activity, partially due to Novartis facing impending patent expirations for some of its major drugs. Bloomberg Opinion's Matt Levine covered Novo Nordisk's unsolicited $9 billion bid for obesity drug maker Metsera, topping Pfizer's $7.3 billion offer and setting up a potential legal battle. He discusses the potential antitrust obstacles of the Danish company's bid and what could happen next. Also this week, The Wall Street Journal reported that Thermo Fisher Scientific has agreed to buy Clario Holdings for $8.88 billion. The synergies of the scientific instrumentation company and the endpoint data solutions provider are expected to generate a double-digit internal rate of return, as the two companies are said to be complementary in their research and data capabilities. The transaction is expected to close mid-next year, with opportunities for future earn-out payments based on the business's performance in the next 2 years. Continuing a string of consolidation in the banking industry, The Wall Street Journal reports that Huntington Bancshares announced it is acquiring Cadence Bank for $7.4 billion. The deal, which will give the combined bank $276 billion in assets, expands Huntington's reach into the South, particularly Texas, and comes after smaller acquisitions for both banks, with Huntington buying Veritex Holdings and Cadence having bought Industry Bank shares. Thanks for sticking that out with us. Moving on to corporate governance. OpenAI's promise to stay in California helped clear the path for its IPO, according to the journal. As part of its recent move to convert to a more traditional corporate structure, previously a hurdle to going public, OpenAI pledged to remain in California as a part of a deal with California Attorney General Rob Bonta. In addition, Reuters reported earlier this week that the company is considering filing for one of the biggest IPOs of all time. The move, which could happen as early as the second half of 2026 for a 2027 IPO, could value the ChatGPT maker at up to $1 trillion. Following news of Elon's earnings remarks last week, Bloomberg notes that Tesla is eyeing internal CEO candidates if Musk leaves over $1 trillion pay vote. Tesla's highly watched shareholder vote on Elon Musk's pay package is coming up on November 6, and the company and its board chair have been running a get-out-the-vote campaign to help get things over the finish line. As a part of the company's media engagement, the chair did note that the company has begun to look at internal replacement candidates if Musk does decide to leave. Next, in an opinion piece for the FT, professors Jonathan Zitnik, Nadia Malenko, and Edwin Hu discussed the recent announcement from Glass Lewis that it will stop making standardized recommendations to its customers. The article asks the question of if this announcement actually changes anything moving forward, noting that it likely won't, since 80% of Glass Lewis customers already receive customized advice based on their preferences. And turning to IPO news, Medline's move to file for its IPO would become one of the largest ever private equity-backed listings, raising $5 billion and putting its valuation at $50 billion, according to coverage out of Bloomberg. Medline is backed by Blackstone, Carlyle, and Hellman & Friedman. Finally, The Wall Street Journal highlights the U.S.'s first large company IPO for Navan during the month-long government shutdown. Navan's shares will be priced between $24 to $26, valuing the company at around $6 billion. From our desk to yours, imagine taking a cool Lower East Side Southeast Asian restaurant replete with servers and bartenders with nose rings and tattoos and plop it in the heart of the Upper West Side, where you can easily get hurt by giant strollers wheeled by very aggressive young parents. Well, that's Pig and Cow, which had been on the LES for many years before growing up and getting an apartment on Amsterdam Avenue. Chef Leah Cohen has Filipino on one side of her family and Romanian Jewish on the other, and she worked at some of New York's finest restaurants. The vibe is playful and upbeat, the music fun, but not too loud, and most importantly, the menu was fantastic. For starters, we had the papaya salad, the BBQ pork tacos, and then murtabak, which is a roti made like a quesadilla. Then for our main, we shared the fried whole fish, or the porgy, also known as sea bream, with sweet and sour Thai basil sauce. We had to have rice, so we went with crab fried rice with an egg, and for a veggie, calabaza sagada, a mix of squash, tofu, and beans in a coconut milk sauce. For drinks, the cocktail menu was fun, and the wine list efficient but with nice choices. We sat at the bar. They also have a chef's counter and outside space. 3 stars from GPP. In People Moves this week, John Malone will relinquish his board roles at both Liberty Media and Liberty Global and transition to chair emeritus. Etsy CEO Josh Silverman will step down as CEO, to be succeeded by the company's president and chief growth officer, Kruti Patel Goyal, and CSX named Kevin Boone as CFO. Boone succeeds Sean Pelkey after 3 years in the role. And finally, upcoming events to keep on your calendar. November 21st, Columbia Law's Milstein Center, Conference on M&A and Corporate Governance in New York. February 2nd to 3rd, WSJ Invest Live in West Palm Beach.